The Princess Sophia disaster is actually missing from some Alaska history books, but it was set against a backdrop that includes the natural seasonal rhythms familiar to everyone in the North Country. Late October 1918, and the Yukon River was days away from icing up. Residents of the Yukon in interior Alaska from as far downriver as Ruby and Iditarod packed the riverboats as they made their last runs of the season. The gold rush of decades earlier was now flowing the other way. Business people, riverboat crewmen, soldiers heading to France, civil servants, miners, and laborers. Ginny Hall's great-aunt and family were among those preparing to leave Dawson City for a southern vacation.
It was a very normal thing. That's what people did. And, of course, the percentage of passengers on the last boats out of the season was higher because people would wait. They were working, whether they were an employee, whether they were mining for themselves. They'd wait until the very end of the season if they could. So they probably didn't think too much about it, the same way that people now don't think too much about flying for the most part.
While some headed for a few months in a warmer climate, Vancouver author Betty O'Keefe says others planned on never coming back.
The fact that it was an unusually large number of people were leaving at that time, people who had been in the North for years and years and years, and that was due to the economic downturn that had already taken place. They had decided they couldn't stick it out any longer, and there were various other people who... We're going to try it outside because it wasn't very good in the north that year.
Riverboat passengers boarded the train in Whitehorse for the ride down to Skagway. One of the vessels preparing for the trip south was the Princess Sophia, a 245-foot double-hulled steamer operated by Canadian Pacific Railway Company. It was outfitted to safely take on more than the usual 250 passengers. October 23rd's evening departure was delayed because of the crowds and congestion on the Skagway docks. Probably in an effort to make up some time, Captain Leonard Locke ordered a speed close to 12 knots down Taya Inlet. It was the middle of the night. North winds were picking up and it was snowing heavily. Mariners relied on dead reckoning then, and those traveling down Lynn Canal usually took a bearing off of the Sentinel Island light. The Princess Sophia's crew never saw it, and they certainly didn't see the small, unlighted buoy on the south side of Vanderbilt Reef, two-thirds of the way down the channel. Still, O'Keefe says the crew probably wasn't too concerned.
I think the fact that Captain Locke was 65 years old, he'd done the route hundreds of times. He was an old hand who'd been sailing that same course for nearly 20 years. He probably felt in his own mind he knew it well enough to sail it blindfolded. And that, in combination with a very severe storm, heavy winds, combination of things put him a mile and a half off course, and that's when they hit the reef.
The grounding itself was not catastrophic. The crew and passengers, most of which were already in bed, were bumped and bruised. The vessel appeared to be resting firmly and nearly straight and even on the flat-topped reef. No panic, no cause for concern. The passengers were still relatively warm and dry. Captain Locke telegraphed his situation to a company agent in Juneau. Just another in a series of groundings for the Princess Sophia, and according to Juneau diver John Lackalt, it was just another inconvenience.
When the radio message was received that the Sophia was on Vanderbilt Reef, everybody did another grounding. You know, I mean, it was no big deal because it happened all the time. There was so many vessels that happened up either on that reef or Sentinel Reef or Sentinel Island.
Vessels from Juneau were recruited to help in a possible evacuation of the passengers, and accommodations for their stay in Juneau were arranged. The Sophia's sister ship, the Princess Alice, shoved off from Vancouver to help. At least 8 boats, including the lighthouse service vessel Cedar, mailboat Estabeth, and fishing vessel King and Wing, eventually arrived at the reef and stood by in case the weather moderated further. But it never did.
And the barometer kept rising, and the winds started coming out of the north, and it hit gale, well more than gale. There were estimates that the wind had hit over 80 miles an hour out of the north. It was really screaming. seas got real big.
Rescue boats took shelter. James Delgado of the Vancouver Maritime Museum says those winds and seas took their toll on the Princess Sophia after nearly 40 hours on the reef.
She worked on that reef for a while. The hull plating gradually gave way. It was weakened, it was buckled, it was cracked, it was thinned, it was peeled, it was shaved. Vanderbilt Reef worked like a cheese grater on the bottom of the hull.
The stern of the ship began lifting off as the radio operator telegraphed his last desperate messages. Historian Ken Coates says it was at that point that panic consumed everyone on board.
It's all of a sudden tipping very dramatically. You can imagine the people screaming. You can imagine the noises, the grinding of the ship on the rocks. The wind is howling. The weather is now turned ferociously cold, and they know they're going down. And, you know, please, God, come and help us. Please come and help us. You can just imagine the pathos and the sadness and the sorrow and the desperation that's behind all of that.
The Princess Sophia, almost broadside to the northwest wind and with its hull weakened, began to pivot in place with the wind pushing on the stern first.
And the more it swung, and all of a sudden it started gaining momentum and speed, and it swung almost all the way 180 degrees around. And at that point, the whole bottom of the ship was torn out, and it sank in just minutes.
Now heading north, the vessel then slipped backwards beneath the waves. Water flooded into the engine room. The boilers exploded. Passengers and crew had no time to put on life jackets or get into lifeboats.
The decks are canted, I'm sure, because she's heavy by the stern and she's going down that reef. There's fuel oil everywhere. No, it had to have been a pretty awful several minutes.
The following morning, the weather eased enough for rescuers to approach the reef, but they were stunned by what they saw. The Princess Sophia was gone. The only visible remnant was the very top of the foremast sticking out of the water just south of the reef. A routine grounding had turned into the worst maritime disaster in Alaska waters. Over 340 men, women, and children were missing and presumed dead. Amid all the grief, there were many questions, but only one survivor, which was unable to tell rescuers more about what happened that terrifying night. A dog that belonged to a passenger scrambled ashore and was found 2 days later, scared, hungry, and covered with oil. But in a world already accustomed to death, the tragedy faded from the public consciousness almost as fast as the vessel slipped beneath the waves. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.